Yeah, well, I had breakfast with her. She told me last week that it was very good. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, the Houghton Region. My name is Jack Clark, and I'm from Apple Valley, and I serve as the board's chair. I want to thank the members of the public for coming to our meeting. You do a better job when you participate in the issues that come before us. At this time, I'd like to introduce the other members of the board. On my far right is Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee. Next to her is Peter Pumphrey from Bishop. And on my far left is Eric Sandell from Truckee. And next to me is our vice chair, Don Jardine. He's from Arkansas. Our executive officer is Harold Singer. Mr. Singer, would you please introduce staff?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to introduce Amber White, who is board secretary for today, and assisted by Sue Genera, who will be the new board secretary starting at future meetings. I'll introduce Lori Kemper, the assistant executive officer, Chuck Curtis, Doug Smith, Ellen Miller, Richard Booth, Dan Sussman, Mary Fiore Wagner. And also I'd like to introduce Kimberly Niemeyer. Kimberly is on staff in the State Water Resources Control Board and is the board's attorney.
Thank you, Harold. The regional board will be considering... Oh, yeah. In this room, we don't have a microphone, so if you can't hear us, please raise your hand. I'll try to speak loud. We all will. And then when you're at the lectern, please speak up, because it's a little difficult in this room because of the way it's configured. The regional board will be considering many items during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item so that our decision will be based on all available information. If you wish to speak to any item on our agenda, please fill out one of our orange cards indicating which item you wish to address and how many minutes you will need. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made before this board to be truthful with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentations, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you abide by our ground rules. Treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, anyone who testifies, and your fellow citizens. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and effectively. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you're recognized, and at that time, please come to the lectern and speak to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules and become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. Any person aggrieved by an action or inaction of the regional board, including but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liabilities, or cease and desist orders, may petition the State Water Resource Control Board to review that decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulation about filing petitions if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resource Control Board website. This time, we will move into item 7, consideration of to adopt resolution to approve or amend the water quality control plan for the Lahontan region. And Harold, I'll let you
We're going to have two staff make this presentation. I think we'll start with Mary Fiore Wagner, and then Dan Sussman will follow up with the rest of the presentation.
Good morning, Board Chair, members of the board. I'm Mary Fiore Wagner, environmental scientist in your Salt Lake Tahoe office, working in the TMDL and Basin Planning Unit. Together with Dan Sussman, who's also an environmental scientist in the Salt Lake Tahoe office, we'll be presenting item number 7 in your agenda.
Excuse me, Mary. Can everyone hear?
No, yeah.
Okay, Mary, you have to really speak up because this room is very difficult.
Today in this public hearing, we'll be discussing the proposed pesticide basin plan amendment. As you recall, this item was presented to you during public hearings in April and May of this year. At that time, we solicited input from the board and the public, and you provided direction to staff. Today, we bring this item before you for consideration for adoption. In this morning's presentation, we'll present modifications made to the amendment language. These changes were necessary based on direction provided by the board and in response to public comments. Here's an overview of the presentation. First, we'll address the need for the amendment. Then, we'll present the alternatives considered and the approach taken by the amendment, which involves a prohibition on discharges of pesticides into waters with exemption criteria for certain circumstances. Then we'll take you through that process from an applicant's viewpoint. Next, we'll discuss the exemption process, including circumstances that may qualify as an eligible project and criteria that must be satisfied to be considered for an exemption. We'll look at some of the comments we've received and how these comments led us to circulate the document for a second public comment period. Then we'll look at potential impacts identified in the CEQA analysis before touching on the timeline for amendment development and adoption. Finally, we'll present our recommendation to the board, and then the board can invite public testimony. So turning now to the proposed basin plan amendment. Our existing pesticide objective is not working. This is not a new realization. The board actually put this on its radar as prioritized by the board in the triennial review since 2003. And there are justified circumstances for aquatic pesticide use. Some of these uses, such as drinking water protection in our southern basin and vector control throughout our region, happen within our region but are technically in violation of the current water quality objective. We need to amend the basin plan to bring these uses under our regulatory oversight to ensure we are protecting the region's waters from unintended impacts. There's also emerging resource management needs. In California, there's recognition that we are part of a trend related to increasing environmental and economic impacts of aquatic invasive species. Both in California and Lake Tahoe, there has been formal adoption of an aquatic invasive management plan. These plans formalize strategies to combat aquatic invasive species, which include that aquatic pesticides should be a tool in the toolbox to consider when treating AIS. There are issues also with the application of the current water quality objective. The objective sets the level of allowable pesticides at non-detect. This is a de facto prohibition. The non-detect objective doesn't provide the Water Board with any discretion. It precludes the Board from allowing and permitting legitimate uses of pesticides, such as those needed for protection of public health and safety or to preserve ecological integrity. When beginning the amendment process, and subsequently in the CEQA analysis, we considered three alternatives. The no-action alternative would leave the water quality objective as is. We've already discussed the problem with the objective as it stands. We looked at codifying numeric water quality objectives. This would require development of numeric objectives and peer review of these objectives, a very costly and time-consuming process, and it puts the burden on Water Board staff and resources rather than the project applicant. Under this alternative, the basin plan would need to be amended for any objectives for pesticides not originally considered in the First Amendment, even those pesticides that are less toxic and equally effective would then have to come before the board for another amendment. Also, the region's diversity of water body types makes it hard to adopt water quality objectives applicable across the basin's water. The third alternative is a prohibition with exemption criteria. We believe that this alternative, our preferred alternative, is the optimum approach. It's consistent with previous board direction to staff. This alternative would establish a formal prohibition of pesticides in all waters, but it provides a pathway for project's proponents to seek an exemption to the prohibition for the use of aquatic pesticides. This alternative requires the project proponents to make its case for exemption and convince the board why the proposed aquatic pesticide should be used. This slide details the approach of how the amendment is formatted. Let's walk through the steps as if we were a project proponent requesting an exemption. First, we see if the project fits into an eligible circumstance and how well it fits. When developing this amendment, staff identified two areas where the continued prohibition of aquatic pesticide use in our region may impact public health and safety and possibly have economic implications. Staff thought it was reasonable to propose circumstances where projects may be eligible for an exemption if they were conducted with the intent of protecting public health and safety or ecological integrity. Again, this is consistent with previous board direction. So if the project fits into a circumstance, we would develop our exemption request. First, there are a set of criteria that every project must meet, no matter the circumstance. Among other things, this includes the purpose and need of the project schedule, the application methods. Then we would include the circumstance-specific criteria, including justification of why non-chemical alternatives to pesticides may not achieve the desired outcome. This information is the project proponent's chance to convince you, the board, to grant an exemption to the prohibition. Granting an exemption request is at your discretion, hence the dashed lines. If you, the board, grant an exemption, the project will be regulated with a permit if needed. So eligible circumstances fall into two broad categories. First, there's projects proposed for the intent of protecting public health and safety. It is important to note that the projects eligible under these categories of public health and safety are already occurring throughout our region. These are projects that are implemented by entities that are statutorily, they have the authority to protect public health and essential public services. This would be vector control, purveying safe water, drinking water. So, in effect, the amendment will bring these applications into our regulatory purview. The second category addresses the existing and emerging threat of aquatic invasive species. It also addresses endangered species recovery and fisheries management, both of which in our region are circumstances that often fit within the road known variants. This amendment captures the road known variants and it updates the current language and refines the existing control measures and monitoring requirements. If the project qualifies as an eligible circumstance, then the applicant continues to make their case to the board by providing evidence that the proposed discharge satisfies the exemption criteria. All projects must provide project-specific information covering the planned treatment protocol. The project proponent must provide and implement a public notification plan, and this would include any water use restrictions or precautions. The project proponent must also provide evidence that the appropriate CEQA document was prepared so that the project would be CEQA compliant. Then, depending on the circumstances, varying degrees of evidence must be provided to justify the need for chemical control. Also, project elements must include measures to protect water quality and minimize unintended effects. These would be built into the project. Examples would include a robust monitoring and reporting program, a mitigation plan, and tracking recovery of non-target species if they were affected. As we developed the amendment, we realized there were few limited circumstances where it may not be necessary for the board to grant exemption to individual projects. If you choose to adopt the amendment before you today, you will be acknowledging the importance of protecting public health and the sense of urgency for projects involving vector control and those declared emergencies by the governor. So for these limited circumstances, provided all the criteria are satisfied, the exemption is granted and no further action is required by the board. I do want to note that vector control districts are following the legal mandate, and they're already regulated by the county ag commissioners and Department of Public Health. However, unlike the water board, their roles are of these two entities, they're not primarily to protect water quality. So the proposed amendment provides the water board with oversight to protect the water resources. When controlling aquatic invasive species and other harmful organisms, we recognize that some projects may require an urgent response for project success. To address this need, the project language takes a tiered approach. Projects that qualify as emergencies are declared an emergency by the governor, or are projects that can be defined as emergency exemptions under CEQA. These projects are provided an accelerated process, and necessary permits can be obtained after the fact. For the next tier, time-sensitive projects, we recognize the sense of urgency and provide the project proponent with a response within 10 days. If allowed by the executive officer, the project proponent may demonstrate compliance with criteria after project implementation. For all other projects, the proponent must demonstrate compliance with all exemption criteria prior to the board considering the exemption request.
Thank you, Mary. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Dan Sussman, and I'm going to start out here by presenting this slide, which presents a timeline of public outreach that we conducted related to the proposed amendment and substitute environmental document. We began back in June of 2009 with three scoping meetings in Bishop, Victorville, and then up here in South Lake Tahoe. In March of this year, we released the substitute environmental document and the amendment language for public review. While in the public comment period, we met with a large number of stakeholders and interested parties, and during this period, we also held two public hearings concurrent with your April and May board meetings in South Lake Tahoe and then in Victorville. Of the comments received during our outreach efforts, several raised issues that required some key changes in the amendment and the associated substitute environmental document. And as a result, we recirculated the substitute environmental document and amendment language starting at the end of September for a second 45-day public comment period. So these next three slides, I'm going to describe issues that prompted this recirculation. We received comments from the California Department of Food and Agriculture and the Department of Public Health's vector control program that specifically addressed the proposed language that limited a treatment event to 1 week. The real-world problem that they had with this is that not all aquatic pesticides that are currently in use degrade within a week. And so some pesticides are time-release or they're systemic, meaning that the plants need time for them to be in the water column to uptake the chemical and to be effective. If we require compliance with water quality objectives within 1 week of pesticide application within the treatment area, we would preclude the use of these slow-release pesticides of particular concern to the Department of Food and Agriculture and the vector control agencies. From discussions with county environmental health departments and the Department of Food and Agriculture, we identified this as an inconsistency within our proposed language. We revised the draft so that it was clear that project proponents can request an exemption to use pesticides that may need to remain effective at effective concentrations beyond 1 week to effectively meet their project goals. In the modified language, you can find on page 80 of your item 7 packet, and it says that the spatial extent of the treatment area and the duration of the treatment event will vary from project to project and will be proposed by the project proponent and accepted or modified by the regional board. And this will be specified, in the final project plans, exemption conditions, and permitting. Again, recognizing the variability of projects and future exemption requests, the board is retaining discretion for regulating individual project compliance. We no longer discreetly are confining a treatment event to 1 week. Similarly, all drafts of the amendment, including the one before you, require compliance with water quality objectives upon completement of the treatment event. This is on page 81 of item 7, the last paragraph. And water quality objectives in the receiving water must be met at all times. So what has changed on these pages 80 and 81 is the time between pesticide discharge and required compliance with water quality objectives in the treatment zone. So previously, the maximum duration of a treatment event was 1 week, while compliance monitoring is still required 1 week after project start. Compliance with water quality objectives within the treatment area is now project-specific. Regardless of whether a fast-release pesticide or a slow-acting compound is used, the lowering of water quality is a temporary condition that must be limited to the shortest time possible to achieve project success. Project-specific requirements will ensure design and implementation will not unreasonably affect beneficial uses. And the proposed basin plan language no longer discreetly defines the duration of the treatment event because we recognize variability of project conditions throughout our region. Another modification we sought feedback on when we recirculated the document is the language governing project communication and notification plans. This section was supplemented to assure some of our stakeholders that downstream water users would be protected. We heard concerns from water purveyors, recreational lake users, and agricultural representatives, specifically the Board of Supervisors of Nevada County, as well as the Nevada County Agricultural Commissioner. In the case of agriculture, farmers would obviously want to know of any restrictions related to herbicides in the water that they were then going to use to irrigate their crops. The updated language, which is on section D on page 85 of item 7, requires the notification and communication plan to reach out to downstream users of potentially affected surface and groundwater that use the water for any beneficial use and to document this outreach. The notification would include use restrictions and recommended precautions. Another change that was made to capture concerns of Lake Tahoe's water purveyors and give them input into any proposed project with potential to affect their water system. For projects in Lake Tahoe, the amendment requires their review of any project within a half mile of one of their surface water intakes prior to submittal of an exemption request. In addition, we also added a footnote which requires consultation with Nevada Division of Environmental Protection for projects that could affect waters of Nevada, and also consultation with California's Department of Public Health for projects that may affect surface drinking water intakes. So let's talk about our environmental analysis. To comply with CEQA, we completed this analysis for our project, and since the intent of a pesticide is to kill organisms, it's not surprising that in the course of our environmental review, we found the potential for some significant impacts to occur if this amendment is adopted. We identified 7 areas across 5 categories where impacts could not be mitigated to less than significant. These impacts are detailed in the findings sections on page 63, starting on page 63 of item 7 of your packet. Now, we know our action may allow the implementation of projects that will likely violate water quality standards. For example, for effective treatment, a pesticide could be applied in a toxic amount and may involve a carrier that creates a visible film, where the treatment here has then violated the toxicity as well as the oil and grease objectives. Additionally, beneficial uses within the treatment area are impaired when the species targeted for control is itself an element of the cold freshwater habitat. So impacts to biological resources then will occur not only to the target population, but also for species that rely on the habitat. So if you were using herbicides to address an invasive aquatic weed, and that invasive aquatic weed also provided habitat to some other species. In addition, discharges of aquatic pesticides may have indirect effect on humans. It may require temporary closures of recreational uses, which could impact both contact and non-contact recreation, and by that I mean fishing, swimming, boating, or pesticide application to a water body with a municipal supply designation may require a temporary shutdown of a particular water intake or water use restrictions. Though these impacts are temporary, they're significant and unavoidable. And given that the intent of applying a pesticide is to yield a toxic effect, you can see how some of these would be potential impacts. By approving this project with unavoidable significant impacts, we are required by CEQA to prepare a statement of overriding considerations. Now, this is the statement of overriding considerations. It starts on page 69 of item 7. To talk about the statement, it finds that the application of aquatic pesticides will result in impacts to the environment, and it explains why these impacts should be acceptable in light of the project's benefits. I'll summarize these three main points. First, the regulated use of aquatic pesticides, it's identified as a tool in the toolbox. The environment is a dynamic place, and without this tool, there could be serious public health, safety, and economic implications, as well as adverse effects on the environment. Secondly, the control measures in the amendment were developed to provide maximum regulatory oversight of exempted pesticide projects and to limit unintended effects on the environment. This amendment will also provide a regulatory pathway for pesticide projects so that projects will not proceed in an unauthorized manner with no oversight. Third, in the environmental analysis, we find that the project will result in impacts to the environment. However, we found that the long-term benefits to the environment, such as controlling invasive species, restoring endangered species, and also the long-term benefits to the people of California, such as vector control, protection of public water supply, and other public health and safety issues, together outweigh the impacts of allowing some degradation to occur. And so we recommend that the board finds that the long-term benefits provided to the environment and the benefits provided to the people of California by this amendment outweigh the impacts of allowing some temporary degradation. So today, Mary and I find ourselves before you again, the board, presenting the substitute environmental document and the amendment for consideration. Let's take a look back at how we arrived here and also the process going forward. So this is the timeline for this amendment, going back to the CEQA scoping meeting in 2009. Assuming the Water Board adopts this action, the amendment would subsequently go to State Board, Office of Administrative Law, and finally the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for approval, and we expect the approval process could be completed by July of 2012. Staff recommends, here's a recommendation, this is the crux. Staff recommends that the board take action and adopt the resolution which certifies the substitute environmental documentation as adequate and approves the basin plan amendment as proposed. This resolution that I referred to is enclosure 1 of your item 7 fourth packet and is found on page 5 of that. Mary and I would also like to detail a few late revisions that were handed out to you this past couple of days. Starting with the first late revision, which is just titled late revision. And the key on here is that third item there on page 070100, which adds some language into that page. And that is the section on recommended future actions for road gnome use. In response to one of our comments from one of the, in the first public comment period, there was concern about the impacts of road gnome that residually could remain in the hyperrheic zone, which is basically the area that is saturated with water in a stream, but underneath the stream bed. So down there in the pebbles and everything put down or whatnot. And they had concern with that, and we decided to address that concern by including as a recommended future action that we would encourage research to determine whether roadgnome persists in stream sediment. And if so, what impact, if any, does it have on these hyperrheic invertebrates with which which they were concerned. We did a literature search, and there did not seem to be a survey of this type of research there. That was the key one on that page. If you would now turn to labor revision number two. Both of these parts of this labor revision are, if they're related, the one on page 17 is from the substitute environmental document, and on page 106 is in what was an addition that we had proposed in chapter 5, the Lake Tahoe chapter. And it was language that said that for region-wide prohibitions, where a decision is passed to the regional board, the term regional board includes the executive officer, where the regional board delegates such authority. And then on page 17, it's basically saying the same thing and describing it in the environmental documentation. We removed this after internal discussions with management and council, because this is...
It's understood through...
Understood. It's an implied...
The board had previously in resolution 2008-003 given Herrick authority, where the board grants him such authority.
Basically, it's understood that you guys can delegate to the executive officer, and so it doesn't need to be laid out there.
It's understood already, so why are we doing this?
And that is, those are our late revisions. We will now turn the floor over to the board to discuss or invite commentary or questions.
Any questions? Yes, sir. Dr. Hart?
Slide 9. Can you give us some specific examples of projects that would qualify? So, did I understand that this tiered approach applies to the environmental preservation projects, or does it apply to public health and safety as well? And give me examples of both of those specific examples.
So this applies to both. So starting at the top with emergency, with public health and safety, it would be if there's, I'm not quite sure, basically for water quality.
For
cyanobacteria, the harmful algal blooms, that's a great example. For ecological integrity, in discussions with the Department of Fish and Game, if they found one of a couple of specific species, like the snakehead fish, the Chonidae, they said that they basically run it up the line to the governor that very day and have it declared an emergency so that they could go in and address it.
It would only apply to a species that had not been previously detected in the water body.
And that's the same, actually, with time-sensitive. And so if the group wanted to come forward and address an aquatic invasive species, and it wasn't actually, it had been sitting in that water body for some time already, well, what's the emergency? Now, for time sensitive, it's similar to emergency. It's basically our way of addressing projects that are of great urgency but don't fit the technical definition of an emergency.
Can you give me a specific example?
Yes, I believe I should be able to. So for time-sensitive ecological integrity, it could be introduction of a new invasive species into a water body that did not meet the level that it would be declared an emergency.
So Asian clams, for instance.
So Asian clams would not be time-sensitive in Lake Tahoe anyway, because we've had them here since 2002, I believe, and they've become more of a focus in the past 3 years. And so those would not be time-sensitive. They would not be a new introduction. They are listed on a number of the lists of... They're listed in the Lake Tahoe and the California Aquatic Invasive Species Management Plan. However, they're here in Tahoe. It's nothing new. So there should, and because it's nothing new, it's not time sensitive because the resource managers have known about it and will have had time to actually address it and come up with a, you know, a reasoned plan over this period of time. And it's not a quick response.
And time sensitive also, I mean, could apply to the water distribution system. In the event, would it be such an emergency because maybe there are other intakes that could provide water? You know, would it be a theory of an emergency?
Perhaps.
Anything else? Peter?
Yeah, also on slide 9, I'm assuming that time sensitive projects or situations, there, because they're time sensitive, there would be no prior CEQA work having been done before the time sensitive project hits the board.
We actually, with time sensitive, the project proponent, the executive officer, can waive the requirement to submit the information before the exemption is granted. They have to supply it within 10 days of receiving the exemption. But for time sensitive, it would likely be it would fit into a categorical exemption.
Would that, the fact that the executive officer then is the first threshold for the time sensitive, does that mean that those projects would not ultimately get to the board, or they would just get through the board on a slightly different track?
That would be up to the executive officer.
Let me try to address that.
It would take one of two paths.
I think that's the key point, is the time sensitive, we're trying to develop a process where we need to do a project pretty quickly. Obviously, it takes time to get on one of your board agendas and move it forward from that perspective. So we're trying to find a place where at least there's a possibility if we need to do this, we have the opportunity to do it through time sensitive. So and let me sort of mesh this with the discussion of one of the errata parts that was put forward earlier, is under the water code, you can delegate all your authority to your executive officer except for five things. And you do that in a separate resolution. And that's one of the reasons why we took it out of the basin plan, is it's understood and it really should be done in a separate resolution. So if I act on a time-sensitive situation, I'm acting as if I'm the board. And that's the action of the board. So it would not come to the board at a separate meeting at a future date. The exemption would have been granted and the applicant would be allowed to go ahead. So I think the key perspective here is if your executive officer feels that it fits the time sensitive and it meets all the criteria, that I would be doing that action on your behalf and it wouldn't come before you. But all of the other actions under the non-emergency and non-time sensitive would definitely come before you.
Let me ask another question with respect to time-sensitive projects would be subject to all of the limitations, temporal, spatial limitations that would apply to any project whatsoever.
Yeah, time-sensitive projects are subject to meeting the minimum discharge of the chemical, the minimum amount of time to be effective. There are a few criteria that do not apply as stringently. So the way that it's formatted is there's a list of criteria that every single project needs to meet. Then there's the list of projects that time sensitive need to meet, and then everything else needs to meet everything above.
What stamp are you on?
Excuse me, number
87.
So if we start on page 85, actually.
All projects, regardless of circumstance, regardless of whether it's an emergency, time sensitive, or all other, have to supply the 1 through 6. Now, for time sensitive and emergency, that can be waived and provided later. But then for time sensitive, you go to page 87. In addition, they have to provide 1 through 4. all other projects that are neither emergency vector control or time sensitive have to then supply 5 through 7.
In addition to 1 through 4.
And I know I'm not asking you to crystal ball the future, but as you sat and worked through this and said, well, how is this going to work and how do we see this playing out, is it your sense that times there will not be a... What volume do you foresee in terms of time-sensitive projects?
Our hope is that the volume of time-sensitive will be like the volume of emergency, which is really small. The hope is that we will not have the reductions of invasive species that are on some list that requires that they be acted upon really quickly. I don't know how realistic that is, but in Lake Tahoe we have a pretty good inspection program. In some of our other waters it's less so, or in some it's non-existent. I really imagine that the vast majority of projects will fit into either of these first two categories.
And also for time sensitive on page 84 at the top, it defines some pretty rigorous criteria that the time sensitive projects must satisfy to even be considered for purposes of AIS control. It has to be identified in these management plans that have been adopted, and the species has to be identified as a species of concern. And the project proponent must be a state or federal agency with the legal authority to control these species.
Right. So, and then the next paragraph under there, which is the second paragraph on page 84, details time-sensitive projects that are not related to aquatic invasive species, that it really needs to be the public agency mandated to protect those facilities, or the private entity that has the authority to perform these on its own, in its own water.
So I'm going to ask this question, even though I suspect that I know what the answer is. Are you satisfied then that the second tier cannot in some way or another be manipulated or used as a door to circumvent the third tier?
It's been brought up to us, if I can give an example, and the short answer is yes. We were asked by one of our stakeholders in the southern region of an example that they thought, well, maybe this could be time sensitive, which is, oh, we're grant funded, we have a grant that's running out in a month, we need a quick turnaround. That's not the type of example that could be used. You know, that they saw that deadline coming a mile away. But yeah, I don't believe that. I'm satisfied with what we're doing.
Thank you,
Amy.
So these lists of species that are in management plans that would qualify for time sensitive, I mean, I know that the number is something like there are 240 non-native species in the California, in the Bay Delta. That's not very far, and people bring boats up from there all the time. So, I mean, are we talking... How many species are we talking are on these lists that might qualify for time-sensitive, for the time-sensitive tier? Are we talking hundreds, or are we talking 10?
For Lake Tahoe, we would have to defer to the Lake Tahoe specific plan, which has a more limited list of species.
Right. I don't want to speculate outside my...
If you'd
my
like to...
Close grasp. There are folks in the audience that might be able to give you a little bit more insight.
Let me try to also address this, because I think, at least from my perspective, we're looking at this not what we know today, but what may occur tomorrow. And I think what we're trying to do is to give some flexibility to the board to react to situations that none of us today sitting in this room can anticipate. But that's the problem we had 20 years ago, and we're facing some of those problems today without the right tools to deal with. So I think by saying, let's look at this list and say, well, how many could it be? That's, again, looking at the situation today. I think we're trying to set up a process where
we can be responsive to situations that clearly fit the intent of a need to get on something right away but doesn't rise to the occasion where the governor will declare there's an emergency. And it, yes, it is a somewhat of a gray area, and yes, it can be abused. There's always the abuse of any kind of regulatory process. But I think the overriding need to have that in there and your oversight of that will limit its abuse and hopefully minimize that possibility, but also give you the flexibility to deal with problems that none of us sitting here today can anticipate. Like, you know, the environment is changing, and we need to be flexible enough to deal with those kind of situations.
Recognizing the environment is changing, I still want an answer to my question of how many species are on that list today. Just so I have a ballpark understanding of.
Could we come back to this question?
You may.
Thank you.
The issue is, to Harold, that is that the board doesn't have oversight in this situation. It's hard for us to exercise oversight with the time-sensitive tier. And so I need reassurance that there are adequate safeguards for this tier.
Any questions, Eric?
No.
I had a quick question on. I see on page 37, 070037. We talked about tier three, and talks about outstanding national resource waters, and we're talking about, of course, Lake Tahoe, Mono Lake. You bet. I'll speak up a bit. I was curious. I had a question about waters originating in wilderness areas. Would that be held to a higher standard?
I can answer that in terms of what's considered an outstanding national resource water.
Yeah.
It's only those that have been gone through a formal designation.
Designation.
So those that our wilderness waters are could be eligible for the state board to designate as an outstanding national resource water, but only Lake Tahoe and Mono Lake at this point have been designated.
Oh, okay.
But anti-degradation definitely would apply to those waters and protect those existing beneficial uses.
And then if I could also come back, I'd like to respond to a question Mr. Humphrey asked earlier. Even under the time-sensitive situation, because your executive officer will be making a discretionary decision, it does have to follow CEQA. So it either has to fit into a categorical exemption, or we would have to go through the process of preparing a negative declaration, which probably would push it out of the time-sensitive process. But there are, categorical exemptions under CEQA that may fit certain situations that don't rise again to a place where the governor would declare an emergency. Under those, your executive officer would have to do that, and if the entity implementing the project was a public entity in California, they would have to satisfy CEQA as the lead agency for the project. So, again, we're not circumventing CEQA through the time-sensitive process.
I think, too, Harold, I'd like to add that time-sensitive category does not preclude involvement from the water board. It could certainly come before the water board for its discretion.
Well, it sounds to me like it could, but it doesn't have to, and we would be worried about it most likely after the fact.
I have a question. Harold, we get letters all the time that you say, in 10 days, I intend to.
Yeah.
Now, we get those all the time. And if I see something that I have a problem with, I know I've got a couple of, Harold, I think this needs to come before the board. Now, would that criteria have the time sensitive? Is there 10 or 5 days or something
I think in many of those situations, that could be a process that's followed. We had talked about that earlier, and again, that goes back to the specific resolution or the specific delegation that you've given me to take action on your behalf. The ones that we send to you you have specifically asked for that kind of notification. And again, with those, we also have a public notification process that goes along with the board notification process. So I think that's a logical outgrowth of this kind of process also, is that time does permit, and in many cases there are days usually involved. It's time sensitive. It's not a matter of hours in most cases. That there would be the opportunity to provide some public notification and notification to the board.
Do we need to make any changes to make that a provision? With that.
Kim is actually reviewing the resolution right now.
That does have an emergency
public notice before.
So the resolution that delegated the authority of the regional board to Harold has a situation for emergency situations. In there it says the executive officer shall notify the board, interested members of the public, of its intent to issue an exemption or exception subject to this resolution at least 10 days before the exemption or exception is issued. A notice of exemption will also be posted on the water board website, distributed through an interested person mailing list, allowing at least 10 days to submit comments. And any water board member may direct that an exemption not be granted by the executive officer and that it be scheduled for consideration by the water board. Additionally, in response to public comment or for any other reason, the executive officer may choose to bring the issuance of the exemption or exception to the water board for its consideration. So that's already in the delegation.
In the time sensitive, and I know this is looking at a crystal ball out in the future, my feeling is that time sensitive, we're probably going to have that 10 days. That the emergency, that's a different situation. The governor does something, then that's different. But the time sensitive, I would think that we would have 10 days to...
Well, we say that we're going to respond in 10 days. That's the way it's written right now.
Okay. So, Amy, would that give you a little more comfort there?
I still want to know how many species are currently
on the... Yeah, so we can answer that question.
And we can come back to that after we have some more participation.
Would we like that now or to address?
I would like that answer now.
Ted Thayer from TRP is here. Thank you.
For Lake Tahoe.
For Lake Tahoe. Thank you. My name is Ted Thayer. I'm the board chair. Ted Thayer, Aquatic Invasive Species Program Coordinator for the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. The Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Management Plan identifies 36 species that are either currently in Tahoe or a threat to Tahoe. Of those 36, 16 are not yet here. So that gives you some idea of the scope. Again, this is just for Tahoe. I can't speak for the rest of your region. I would like also to add, there was a question about how likely these things are to happen, and Dan mentioned our prevention program. And certainly, while that does significantly reduce the risk of new introductions, it would be important to have that emergency provision.
And Mary and Dan, just a quick question then. For the time-sensitive species projects, these would also have to be covered by an existing general permit, essentially, correct?
They would have to be, yeah.
So we're looking at...
It takes more than 10 days to write a permit.
So we're primarily looking at those projects that would fit under the existing state water board general permit for invasive species, aquatic invasive species.
Yes. And if I could add one more thing that Mary reminded me, which is kind of why we have this category. And it came out of discussions with the Aquatic Invasive Species Management Plan development about a rapid response plan that those have. And rapid response plans sometimes are actually species specific, sometimes they're not. And we were looking at a way to be able to permit a rapid response, but we're trying to recognize that not all of those instances would fit into a formal emergency designation. So this was our effort.
So would the fact that you're going to rely on an existing state board general permit, I mean, the state board then has already done essentially the work and looked at those. I mean, it's specific to certain kinds of pesticides, correct?
Right. So the state board permits, as you correctly say, the general permits, they call out specific pesticides. On top of that, we would still require information about the extent and duration and trying to limit that, the extent of the duration. So we still are layering a number of criteria on top of the protections in the state permit.
But it's not likely then for the time-sensitive project that you could have some sort of pesticide that hasn't been tried and
For the state board permit, the only permitted project for control of aquatic invasive animals is hypochlorite right now. So if a project proponent chose to use something besides that,
it couldn't fit within the time.
It would not fit within the state board permit or probably the time-sensitive category.
Right, so even though it could get maybe an exemption, it couldn't be permitted, so it probably would just have to
right.
go. So, I mean, that's kind of another layer,
category.
Sort of another layer of protection for those time-sensitive
yeah.
projects.
Any other comments? Amy, you got your answer, correct? Any other comments? Okay, very good. Thank you. Cards here. The first card I have is Ted Thayer with the TRPA.
Good morning again. Once again, I'm Ted Thayer, the Aquatic Invasive Species Program Manager for the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. I just had a couple of quick comments. I had outlined a bunch of things I wanted to mention, but Mary did an excellent job of mentioning them all in their presentation, so I don't want to be duplicative, but I did want to say that I believe your staff did an excellent job preparing this amendment and really appreciate their hard work on this. And I did want to reinforce a bit that this amendment is consistent with the Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Management Plan and strategies in there that, as Dan mentioned, provide for the establishment of a rapid response plan for species that we don't yet have. But also there is a strategy in there that specifically addresses providing for all appropriate treatment and control methods. And this would also do that. And just to remind you that Lake Tahoe Aquatic, Lake Tahoe Regional Aquatic Invasive Species Management Plan was approved by Federal Aquatic Invasive Species Task Force and endorsed by both the governors of California and Nevada, as well as the director of the TRPA. So it does have that kind of universal support in that those strategies are appropriate. The other thing I just wanted to quickly mention is just that this amendment is consistent with the TRPA code when it comes to pesticide use, and that it does not encourage pesticide use, but that it does establish these clear criteria that projects need to meet before that they can used. And I did want to mention that, yes, while the management plan does articulate that we need to provide for all appropriate treatment and control methods, that, yeah, we do look at herbicides and other crossing pesticides. It's merely a tool that may be needed in certain projects, but certainly not something that we would ever default to without going through all the appropriate and exhausting all of it. So, thank you very much.
Any questions or questions there? Thank you very much. The next card I have is Jim Brockett.
Good morning, members of the board. I'm actually representing a couple of different agencies. My name is Jim Brockett, and I am the Aquatic Invasive Species Control Program Coordinator with the Tahoe Resource Conservation District. I have a couple of letters here. One is from the Lake Tahoe Basin Coordinating Group. And I just want to read these into the record. This first letter is signed by Wendy West, and it says, "The Lake Tahoe Basin Weed Coordinating Group strongly supports the proposed changes to the basin plan that will replace the region-wide pesticide water quality objective with a region-wide waste discharge prohibition on pesticides, including an exemption criteria for aquatic applications." We feel that the original pesticide water quality objective failed to provide a process for use of pesticides to achieve critical goals protective of ecological integrity and human health. The new amendment provides flexibility in granting discretion to the board to determine when exemptions are necessary. It also recognizes that terrestrial application of pesticides to control invasive weeds can safely be made without resulting in discharges to water lines. We urge you to approve the Basin Plan Amendment. And again, this is from the Lake Tahoe Basin Weed Coordinating Group, which has membership and partners from many, many public agencies, and I won't read the list. But anyway, that's signed from Wendy West, the chairperson. The next thing, you'll just offer me your indulgence here, from the Tahoe Resource Conservation District. This is from Dave Roberts, our district manager. And again, I'm the Aquatic Invasive Species Control Program Coordinator for the Tahoe RCD, and have spent a lot of time over the summer in a couple of different projects where we've actually been conducting some control, aquatic weed control project activities. And have spent a fair amount of time underwater looking at these plants and employing a lot of the currently allowed methods for plant control. So I have a little bit of experience out there this summer. Anyway, this is the letter from Dave. Tahoe Resource Conservation District, Tahoe RCD, has reviewed the proposed amendments to the Water Quality Control Plan for the Oahu region. We value and support the efforts that have been made to provide an objective evaluation of the need and necessary protections for the use of aquatic pesticides in Lake Tahoe. We also appreciate the opportunity to comment on this proposed amendment. As the primary implementing agency for aquatic invasive plant control projects in Lake Tahoe, Tahoe RCD has had direct and practical experience in utilization, implementation, and evaluation of currently permissible methods. We have directly participated in and observed the application of gas permeable effective barriers and diver assisted hand removal for control and removal of aquatic invasive plants. These methods have proven to be highly effective in discrete nearshore areas of Lake Tahoe, most notably Emerald Bay. We anticipate continued use of these proven effective methods in the future. However, in areas of Lake Tahoe where habitat has been significantly modified, such as marinas, the effectiveness of current methods for treatment is undetermined. In 2011, a project was initiated in the Tahoe Keys Lagoons to assess the effectiveness of current methods in areas where artificial habitat conditions exist. Plant density, plant accessibility, substrate composition, recolonization rates, project costs, and other factors are currently being analyzed to assess the feasibility of current methods. The Tahoe RCD is in support of the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board's proposed basin plan amendment, as it will provide additional tools for effective treatment and control of aquatic invasive plants where current methods are determined to be either ineffective or cost prohibitive. Significant progress has been made in recent years to control and manage aquatic invasive plants in Lake Tahoe. And Tahoe RCD hopes to advance partnerships with the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board, other regional agencies, and private landowners for the management, control, and prevention of the spread of aquatic invasive plants throughout Lake Tahoe. We believe the ability to employ responsible and appropriate location-specific use of aquatic pesticides will accelerate the goal of eradication where possible and management where necessary of aquatic invasive plants throughout Lake Tahoe. And again, that's signed by Dave Roberts. So anyway, I just have to provide these for the record. Thank you.
Oh, actually, we can't take those.
Okay.
After the deadline.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. I have two cards here from Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association. One and Joey Wolf.
Thank you for letting me speak today. I'm Joey Wolf, president of TKPOA. I also first want to thank Dan.
Would you speak up, please, a little bit? Speak louder, please.
I'm Joey Wolf, president of TKPOA. Before I start, I want to thank Dan and Mary for the excellent work that they've done. I came to Tahoe 2.5 years ago because I met my son here for vacation over the years and thought it was the most beautiful place I had ever seen. After being here for a half a year, I was asked to be on the TKO board. I have much more to learn, but during the last year and a half, I have learned so much about what goes on under and in the most beautiful lake I have ever seen. I have learned our mowing of weeds in the lagoons in TKPOA is a temporary local solution, but helps to spread the weeds into the lake. Through an ongoing experiment with several government agencies, we are learning that mechanical means, such as mats, are not financially feasible in the Keys. I have learned that so far, the dye study shows no movement outside of the lagoons that they are dispersed in. Of course, there is much more research required before the results are documented. I ask the board today to please pass the amendment to allow the use of all available tools to help keep Lake Tahoe free of invasive weeds and the most beautiful lake in the U.S. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Great feat.
We thank the Lahontan board and the staff. Mary and Dan.
Who are you representing?
Tahoe Keys. I'm the general manager there. Thanks. But we thank them for their effort and I think courage in drafting this proposal. The word herbicide is not a good word in the United States anymore, but I think invasive species are becoming a bad word too, and that's good. As citizens fully invested in the preservation of Lake Tahoe, Tahoe Keys Property Association believes that controlling increasingly abundant colonies of invasive aquatic weeds now instead of later is of paramount importance. If the spread of invasive aquatic species is to be controlled and reversed, it must be done now while it is still possible, while the colonies are smaller. If this amendment does not pass now, it probably will do so 3 or 5 years from now, and the problem will be much, much worse. The problem is still manageable, so let's manage it while we can. Current methods of controlling invasive aquatic weed species are successful pretty much only in maintaining open channels for boat navigation, but do not control the spread of invasive weed infestations. Other methods of controlling weeds, such as bottom barriers tested in our waterways this summer that Joey was referring to and Jim was referring to, are extremely impractical in my opinion, and appear to be very expensive. We're going to find that out with the second phase of this large experiment and project that we're doing in the Keys for the summer of 2012. We just got done with 2011 phase. But these barriers also create new problems, such as additional biomass and an unnatural lake bottom. As harvesters of aquatic weeds at a level I think that's unmatched anywhere in Lake Tahoe, Tahoe Keys can attest to the limitations of these and other non-chemical methods. There are still, will always be uses for that. We're looking for one more tool in the toolbox, just like other people here have said. The problem is of aquatic, invasive aquatic weeds is getting worse. It can still be controlled. It can still be eradicated. But we have to be granted the tools to do so now. Please allow us to reasonably and safely employ every proven tool available to control the spread of invasive species in Lake Tahoe and to begin doing so while the eradication of these species is still possible. Any questions?
Questions? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
The next card I have is Greg Reed, Tahoe Water Suppliers Association.
I'd like to thank the board for allowing me to make a presentation today. My name is Greg Green. I'm the general manager of Round Hill General Improvement District and chairman of the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association. The TWSA consists of 12 public water suppliers in the Lake Tahoe Basin whose source of drinking water is Lake Tahoe. The majority of our members pull water directly from Lake Tahoe to service their customers. The purpose of the association is to protect the water quality of the purvey of drinking water from waterborne contaminants that are potentially harmful to human health. Source water protection is an effective tool in a multi-barrier approach to protecting drinking water. First, we'd like to recognize the cooperative efforts of the Lahontan Board and staff in arriving at the proposed language. The proposed language now includes bringing the water, public water providers and the Nevada and California drinking water regulators into the review process for projects proposed at Lake Tahoe within a half mile of water intake. We appreciate this effort towards mitigation. However, as drinking water providers at one of the most pristine water bodies in the U.S., we're still very concerned about the potential impacts of drinking water quality from chemical introduction to the waters of Lake Tahoe. Lake Tahoe is a Tier 3 Outstanding National Resource Water. This is the highest designation of non-degraded water body in the nation. Lake Tahoe is not simply a California water body. These waters are federally owned and national treasure. Therefore, we wish to ask the Lahontan Water Board reconsider a five-year moratorium on any chemical use projects at Lake Tahoe. A five-year moratorium would allow time for Lahontan's project review process to be developed and the scientific documentation of selected chemical use effect on drinking water to be vetted in the lower tier water bodies within Lahontan Board purview before introducing chemical use at Lake Tahoe. For Tier 2 lands in the Tahoe watershed, allow selected chemical use and related waste discharge only for projects related to public health, vector control, and protection of drinking water supply. These projects must be subject to rigorous project review, including applicable water purvey review before approval. In the event of an aquatic invasive species emergencies, such as the introduction and detection of zebra or aquatic mussels, within Lake Tahoe, maintain the emergency language granting the board a special exemption category. This category would allow the board to permit possible chemical use and waste discharge after after emergency project review, inclusive of review by a potentially affected water provider. In the case of an emergency situation related only to public health, vector control, and protection of drinking water supply. Again, we'd like to thank the board and staff for their cooperation. And again, we would like to urge the board to consider a five-year moratorium within Lake Tahoe. And I take any questions.
Questions? Yes. Dr. Horn.
Do the water purveyors in Lake Tahoe have the ability to share water between them, water supplies?
Some do and some don't. So in the emergency, in the case of an event at one water utility, they might have an interconnection with another, but not always.
Okay, so of the water purveyors that do not have the ability to share water or receive water from another purveyor, how many of those have only one water intake?
I don't know the answer to that, but speaking for myself, we have one water intake.
And you do not have the ability to share?
And we do not have an interconnection with another utility. And that's common.
How many connections do you have?
We have 500 connections.
Any other questions?
I have one question that this might go to staff. In one of the bases for asking for the moratorium is to allow time to develop the review process. It would be my understanding that no project could go forward until it's completed the review process. So that's already built into this situation. May not require a full 5 years, but until the review process is there, no project can be reviewed and approved. Am I understanding that correctly?
Um, by review process, you mean?
Well, maybe I should back up and ask the gentleman what he means by review process, so I make sure that we're talking about the same thing.
Well, I have two things we're really talking about. One is to allow some of the processes and use of chemicals in other water bodies to see the impacts, to understand the impacts, to be able to and have that five-year moratorium so that can be done in lower tier water bodies. That's the first. And as far as the review process, that is still in the development of our consideration. This is still a developing process. We would like to see this process be more fully developed and more rigorous before it comes into town. So that's our concern.
And so in response, yes, there is a concern that Greg is expressing that we have a process, our process is on paper. How will that process work when it's actually put into practice?
And could I ask, how was the figure of 5 years determined? On what basis is 5 years enough time, too much time, the magic time, whatever?
Good question. When we started this process with staff, our position really was, we're not in favor of this at all. Okay. And so we come through that and said, we got the language that included the water purveyors, and we were appreciative of that. And then the more that we started looking at really what the potential implications here were, we said, we appreciate everything that's been done, but we're still not comfortable that this process is going to get us the protection that we desire. And so we've asked for 5 years. Could we have picked 10? We could have. Could we have picked 30? Probably not recently. So 5 years, we felt, was the number that would give us some protection without being unreasonable in our request.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is what volume of projects do you see playing out in all these other locations that you would then use to determine your level of comfort, and what spectrum of potential uses or potential treatment regimes do you think are going to play out during that period of time? It seems to me, I understand the concern. Let me start there. We are sitting next to a treasure here, and I do get the value of that. But it seems really, really speculative to sit here and say, we think in 5 years all of the things that are potentially applicable to Lake Tahoe will occur somewhere else, and we're going to be able to then learn lessons that will make us feel better about this. What happens if all of those spectrums don't play out in other areas? Does that mean you would come back at the end of 5 years and say, well, there's some other stuff that we're really worried about, but it never got tested anywhere else, so we want another 5 years to see whether or not those get picked up by somebody else? I'm looking for some kind of basis on which you think you're safe in predicting that all these activities will happen somewhere else and satisfy your concerns.
And I can.
Okay.
One quick question. What level of treatment do you do on your water that you take out of the lake?
It depends on the utility. Each utility around the lake is different. In our particular case, we have a filtration plant, so we filter the water that comes in out of the lake. However, even with filtration, any chemical that was found in the water, we would be unable to remove. And that is the same with any of the utilities around the lake. We're not set up for chemical.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
So with respect to your one, I'm trying to understand the nature of the threat to your water supply. So it would help me to understand exactly where your water intake is, how far is it from the shore, how deep is it in the water, and then maybe staff you were having a side conversation right now, could give me some information about where, what the likelihood is of chemicals reaching his intake.
Our particular intake, and all the water purveyors are running across the state, but our particular intake is 2,500 feet offshore, and it's in 60 feet of water. Okay? And as part of the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association, we've done some studies on, have had studies done by Black and Beach on the current and movement of water around the lake. And there's some of that stuff is available. And what it shows is that there is a potential for movement across the intakes. And depending on where the chemical is applied, what the chemical is, the concentration, et cetera, et cetera, it is possible for those chemicals to move across any number of intakes across the lake. And that's our concern as an association. But so it would depend on the specific application on what the possibility of getting to our particular intake or anybody else's.
And also, if I may add on page 85, also for Lake Tahoe projects that may be within a half mile of the water intake, the project proponent is responsible to provide an estimate of the maximum foreseeable concentration of the pesticide in any surface water intake used for the drinking water supply. So they are required to do a fate and transport study to see what the concentrations may be.
Okay.
And they may be doing that through the environmental CEQA process when they're preparing that environmental document and trying to identify impacts to drinking water intakes and water resources.
Okay. And then what recourse would the water purveyor have upon receiving that information?
Well, as part of the process also, for any water purveyor that's within a half a mile of where the project would be, the project proponent is actually required to discourse with the water purveyor and provide us, the water board and water board staff, written documentation of this discourse and a statement from the water purveyor either saying, hey, we're good, go ahead, or we're not all right with this. These are the modifications that we would like to see done to set us at ease. And that could go up to, we just aren't comfortable at all.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to, if that's the final, their final comments on it, and their final determination, and that's what the project proponent brings to us, we would, you know, still have the option of bringing it to the board, and the board obviously could take that information, and it's at your discretion to talk to the project people and say, you need to change this, or just to deny it.
So the purveyor is actually engaged with the project proponent before it comes to the water board, and they can request project modifications to project design, monitoring, and mitigation.
And if they don't provide us with that evidence that they that the project proponent have interacted and have, you know, written correspondence and whatnot from the water purveyors, then that's an incomplete exemption request, and they have to do that before we bring it forward.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. The next card I have is Bob Ludwig, I believe, from Lakeside Park Water System.
Members of the board, I'm Bob Oding. I'm the water system manager for Lakeside Park. For Lakeside Park.
That microphone doesn't.
Oh, you need to speak up louder.
Oh, okay. I will raise my voice. My name is Bob Loading. I am the water system manager for Lakeside Park, which has the closest intake to one of the proposed ROP projects that is on the list, Tahoe Keys. I'm also a long-term resident of Lake Tahoe. And for the past 40 years plus, I've I've been a water system and wastewater system operator for both states, California and Nevada. So I realize the pristine nature that we have here in Lake Tahoe. When the operation that I'm operating at Lake Tahoe, its source cannot be copied any place in the world that I'm going to. And it's a very, very special source of water. It doesn't have hardly any contaminants. So, you know, we've arranged or we build our treatment systems to cope or to comply to get the best water supply, safe drinking water standards, by the source of the water. That's why with TWSA, we're all working to protect our water supply. Very important. Having treated other sources of water on the other side of the hill, it's very, very difficult. There's a lot of things that we have to cope with that are in the water that we would rather not have. My main concern is not only that there be a moratorium on chemical usage in Lake Tahoe, but at the bare minimum, limit the project size. The larger the scope of the project, the more chemicals that will be added. And we might not know the outcome in a number of years. Greg has mentioned we've done some current studies, which we were concerned about if there's a contamination at one point, what the effect might be for the rest of the water systems. A half mile is nothing. It can be covered, winds come up, blows towards you, you're in the affected area. We start to detect the chemicals that we're looking for, it's too late. That's my concern. That's why I'm asking, and I'm agreeing with Greg and TWSA that we have a 5-year moratorium so we can come up with a better plan. We aren't concerned about the chemicals that are being added to the land or to the or for vector control. That's not our main concern. But now we're changing the rules of the game where we're adding chemicals directly to the source water. And that's what has us all nervous. Like I said, if you can, at the bare minimum, at least put some language in there that would as we go through this development period, that would decrease the project size, it will also increase the impact. Any questions?
Any questions? Yes.
Is your water supply, can you interconnect with any other water supply?
We have a small interconnection with the SOTPUD.
Okay. And how many intakes do you have for your water supply?
We have the one lake intake, which is out there in the lake. We also have a groundwater supply that we could utilize during an emergency.
How far is your intake from the Tahoe Keys?
As a bird flies?
As the water flows.
probably about 3 miles.
The discourse between the project proponent and the water purveyors that the staff just described, what parameters would give you a sense of comfort?
I would like to see if any project is going through is that all water purveyors. Because as I said before, the currents, and we've seen this in the last few weeks with some of the wind storms that we've had. it can spread fast.
Okay, so if there was a project in King's Beach,
I think that all water purveyors south of the entire lake should be notified, yes. And have him know that.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The next card I have is Jennifer Carr, Nevada Department of Environmental Protection.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Carr. I'm chief of the Bureau of Safe Drinking Water with the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection. And I wasn't originally intending on coming up and saying anything this morning, but I would like to, again, commend staff, as many others have, of the participation that they've allowed us and written into the program. We've really enjoyed the conversations that we've had with them, and you have, in my opinion, very great people working on their behalf on a daily basis. So the conference calls and whatnot that we had on these issues were very beneficial to Nevada and California. The reason I decided to submit a comment card was related to the issue that's actually being discussed, started by Mr. Reed and elaborated by Mr. Loading. One of the original suggestions that we made to staff during an earlier comment period is in relationship to that half mile. It's my understanding that the discourse with the water purveyors wouldn't be triggered unless a project was within a half mile of an intake, which also was of concern to us. It's my understanding generally that the half mile was proposed by my colleague in California, and I honestly don't know if there was a scientific basis on that half mile recommendation or if it was just a wag. Our original suggestion was similar to what Mr. Loading suggested, is that if there was a project in the Tahoe Basin, that essentially all water purveyors would be notified with their ability to then say, you know, I think that's far enough away, I'm not interested, I don't need to be involved further in this process on this project. Whereas another one that may be within, you know, a mile or 2 miles might say, you know, I really want to keep track of this. I want to be in part of this process. Because of the modeling that's been mentioned, the things we're still learning about currents and flows related to wind and other mechanisms in the Tahoe Basin, you know, someone, the general manager of the Kingsbury GID or the Incline Village GID may be a couple miles away, but say, I'm just really not comfortable with this. I want to maintain my status as part of this process. So I just to give you a little bit maybe more background on some of the discussions that we've had, that was our original suggestion on full notification, but it did default back to the half mile based on the fact that that was the recommendation of, like I said, my counterpart in California. Thank you.
Comments? Thank you very much. The last card I have is it's Mike Merrick.
Thank you very much. I want to commend the people that put this staff, this study together and the program together. I'm an ex-federal, and it's amazing what they put together in this year, the program that they want to develop and go through it. Right now, I work for the Keys. I take care of above the water, make people keep everything looking nice. And the guy in the black coat drives up to your house and says, take a look shabby. I did go out in the boat this year, and I do the patrol, and I watch the weeds as they grow from the little babies up to full adults all year long. No matter what our efforts are out there with all the crew, it's not going to stop. Mechanical means just doesn't work. It's a nice closed experimental lab you have out there. The stuff doesn't flow in and out. It gets carried in and out on propellers. The water is pretty much where it is without running the pumps. You have to go forward and see, will this work, at what concentrations you need. I would imagine one of the scientists in this room could tell me how many tankers brought in on a train of pesticides would have to be dumped in the lake to get one part per billion. I would imagine it would have to be 100 or 1,000 tanker loads. I understand the concerns of the water purveyors that, you know, some particles are going to come their way, but being on Lupin's water system, I read their numbers and I get particles every day of stuff. I don't know what it is either. I understand the pesticides that we use have a shelf life, or half life, as they say, and disappear, and that's the balance they need. Rarely, in an experiment of scientific type, do you get a community that wants to help. The entire larger community is willing to put money forward, and it's so close that it's almost like in a laboratory. So I would just request that you go forward, and at least let's find if it's beneficial. Is it going to be a detriment to the lake? In my heart, I don't think it will be. I think economically it will be a benefit, not just for the Keys area, but the whole lake is now being pestered by these horrible weeds. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, sir.
I have a question.
You want to do it right now? You want to do it?
I've got one question.
Tom Spencer. Self-private citizen.
My name is Tom Spencer. I'm a full-time resident here at the city of South Bend.
Speak up just a little bit, please.
Okay.
It's difficult for people to hear in the back.
Okay. Had a little trouble with my throat. Got over some of that crud that was going around here a while back. So I gave it a shot. Anyway, I just wanted... I am a resident of the Tahoe Keys, but I'd like to say that we're very concerned as a community about the quality of the lake, and we're very concerned that we not be contributors to the problem with the invasive species, and want to work in partnership with all the various agencies and groups that have concerns about the quality of Lake Tahoe. I have been party to many of the discussions going on in the Keys, so I'm somewhat familiar with what's going on with the issue. I would just, based on my lay understanding of it, I would just encourage you that as you consider this amendment and whether or not aquatic herbicides can be utilized under your very stringent safeguards, that you not tie your hands in this war we have with invasive species. Put whatever safeguards in you need to put in, but do not tie your hands. I take issue with those who would contend that Lake Tahoe is not yet contaminated. It is contaminated, and it's scary. What's going on out there with the spread of invasive species and the possible introduction of additional invasive species is very scary. Don't tie your hands. Think about that. You pass some kind of a moratorium that says you can't do anything with one tool, and something gets out of control, you may be sitting here 5 years from now saying, oh my God, and now it's loose, and now we can't do anything about it. Don't. I mean, people are important, and their drinking water is important, and we don't want to poison anybody, but we also want to protect this lake. And its natural value and its natural systems could be overcome and overwhelmed by invasive species. Don't forget that part of this discussion. Don't lose the tools. Keep the tools. Keep them at your disposal, but certainly put on whatever safeguards you need to put on in the use of those tools. And that would be my hope the board will be able to find a way to do that and pass this plan, this basic amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more comment cards. So we
I wanted to ask a stop question.
Okay.
I would like to know the basis, the scientific basis supporting the half mile distance for notifying the water purveyors of the project.
If I could direct your attention to page 230, and it was a response provided to
Nevada Division of Environmental Protection, and they were correct in saying that it was proposed by Carl Lischewski of California Department of Public Health. He's in the drinking water division, that half mile. And we have met with the purveyors, California Department of Public Health, Drinking Water, and DEP. And, you know, we were talking about what distance would they would be comfortable with. And as a starting point, we went off the quarter mile distance that was proposed in TRPA shore zone ordinances. That was a setback for shore zone structures that supported motorized watercraft activity. A little different from this case, but watercraft are discharging gasoline into the lake. So I think the concern with the purveyors were there. That, as we know, those ordinances are currently under litigation, but that was a quarter mile setback. So that was the starting point we used, and from there, Carl with California Department of Public Health had thrown out the half mile, and I thought we had some consensus from the purveyors at that meeting that they were more comfortable certainly with the half mile. Though NDEP did provide comments that you can refer to on 230 of item number 7 in your agenda packet. It's that first R, if you look at the box, R9, and you can see what their actual comment was.
Okay, so it doesn't...
They said with any potential to be impacted. I think, you know, it's too speculative at this point to throw out a distance. This is where, on a more project-specific level, on the case-by-case, where the project proponent is actually doing the safe transport study as they complete their environmental documentation and identify potential impacts, that you would have a better idea of what the distance might be.
Okay. So, sounds to me like there's no scientific basis for the half-mile distance. It's just a number. So when the project proponent, is that correct?
Yeah. We were just having a side discussion, and you know, if you wanted a revision that you could make, which is you could pull out the half a mile and just say with water purveyors, the discussion would have to be made with water purveyors, and that might go a little further towards your concern and towards their concerns.
Okay. Now I lost my next question. Oh, okay. The fate and transport study. So, say a project proponent in Lake Tahoe did a fate and transport study and found effects that were more than half a mile. Would they? Do they then have an obligation to notify other water purveyors that might be affected according to their fate and transport study?
This is Lori Kemper. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer for the record. And on page 85 for the item, the communication and notification plan, it's 1B. So for all projects that the board's going to consider, there's a communication and notification plan that has to be implemented, and the proponent has to contact all affected parties who may use the water downstream for any beneficial use for all projects. So that is, you know, extremely broad. That's the just the reaching out part. The additional requirements are this little I, little, you know, two double I. That's where there's an actual requirement to provide written responses. So there's a broad requirement that you do outreach and you notify everybody who could be affected. And essentially, at that point, they're just letting people know what they're doing and what the potential impact is. And, you know, if someone was concerned, they can come to the board meeting, they can provide comments to us. Specifically for projects in Tahoe, we had these additional requirements that they, as a project proponent, actually deliver a written response. We wanted to show a higher level of engagement. So, you know, if the board's discretion, I mean, we could apply that to all projects. We could take out the one half mile, but I want to make sure that everybody's aware that for every single project, we want to do as good a job as we can and make the project proponent do that, is to let everyone know downstream. I think originally as Dan had mentioned in his presentation, we had heard from some agricultural users on the Truckee River. They wanted to know about herbicide applications in the Truckee, you know, even though they were in Nevada, let's say. And we had added some language about ag use. And I said, you know, we should be telling everybody, fishermen, swimmers, boaters, you know, drinking people who drink the water, the water purveyors, you know, this should be broad. And that's how this is written, that we're doing outreach to everybody that would be affected.
Yes, Peter?
Could you tell me, just as a follow-up, is there a downside to engaging all of the purveyors in terms of those, as opposed to the half mile?
No, there's no downside to that. I mean, it's obviously a burden on the project proponent to provide the written responses, but I think the point that the one from Nevada mentioned was that, you know, to give people an opportunity, this is what's happening in the lake. There's not that many water purveyors in the Lake Tahoe Basin, so to notify each and every one of them and have them say, this is too far away, we're not concerned, or, you know, we have concerns, I don't think that's it.
Thank you.
And I wanted to just let the board know, too, on the question or the request for the five-year moratorium, I want to let the board know that, you know, you have the ability to take different actions outside this basin plan amendment. So this is something that's being fixed in our basin plan. And I know some of the board members were here years ago when the board heard a proposal for Tahoe Keys, and the proponent really wasn't quite ready to go. I mean, he hadn't done the full environmental analysis, and the board adopted a notice of exclusion, and that was specific to the state board's general permit, because the state board had issued these emergency general permits that would essentially allow a lot of projects to move forward without a lot of discretion. And the board specifically made a policy statement that said, no, we're not ready for Tahoe, and we're going to exclude those projects. So there are other vehicles for the board to make a decision about projects in the Tahoe Basin or anywhere in the region. So, you know, I think that the language here in the basin plan requires project proponents to provide a lot of information to the board, and when a project comes before the board can deny it on an individual basis, based on public outcry, based on water purveyor concerns, or the board could consider a policy statement if there was a specific chemical or, you know, there was some bad experience somewhere else in the state. The board said, we don't want to repeat it here until they work out those bugs. The board could have a resolution that would lay out that specific instance separately, you know, and outside of the basin plan. So I want to let the board know you have those opportunities.
So I have no more cards. Discussion among board members. I think that I sympathize with the water purveyors because that's what I did my whole career. I think that there are safeguards in this basin plan amendment, and just what Lori was just suggesting, that we have so many options as projects come before us that we can adapt, change. This just cleans up some bad language, I feel, in our basin plan. I agree with Peter that I don't think, because of the number of water purveyors that are within the Tahoe Basin, I think that the half mile and just go away. I think that everybody should be notified, because in Tahoe it's a unique water. It downstream really doesn't have an effect. I mean, sure, the Truckee River does, but downstream, waters move. It's like the one gentleman was saying with the winds you have. I mean, water from the north side of the lake could have ended up over here. Maybe not the deep water, but some of the upper stratas of water can move. And I think that there's enough safeguards in this plan that we can look at each project and really analyze it. And it's going to be at the proponent, the person who wants that. This is going to cost some money, but we've got to do it right. And to take the one gentleman was suggesting, the five-year moratorium, and let things happen in other parts of our region, it's a good idea. I don't think it'll work because Tahoe is so unique. I mean, I'm from the southern part of the region. We don't have anything down there like Tahoe. And you know, there's been, over the years, there's been some things done on Haywee Reservoir and some of the other places. In one of the other regions, there was some bad things done with Rotenone up in Alturas or wherever that was. So, you know, we have some experience there, but we have Tahoe, and we've got to protect it. I think that we can make some minor changes in this and move forward with it so that there are options so that the bad species can be taken care of. That's kind of my idea. Eric?
I concur. I think it sounds like the rest of the board concurs also that we should remove the half-mile limit and give all the purveyors notice, and those who are not interested can simply opt out for further information on that particular item. I think it makes much more sense. I have one other thing to say about this, which is that, of course, this is a huge change. I can recall when we've dealt with the Keys about their weed problems, this Kaskan Jack, you know, we resisted their application for the use of chemical removal of weed, control of weeds. And I'm actually a little curious to know what will happen when if you kill all the weeds with chemicals, you're still going to be left with all the weeds. They'll just be dead. So there's going to be some issues there of removing them, no matter how you look at it. But the Keys is a special case. It's unique in all of the lake. There's no other environment around that I can think of. Marina's come a little bit close, but nothing is like the Keys in terms of higher water temperatures and a unique environment for the growing of things that you don't want to grow at Tahoe. I think the writing's on the wall that we have to move in this direction. We've resisted, but I think that this is well written, well thought through, and I'll support it if we change this half-mile intake notification part of it.
John?
I just have a few comments. I support everything you said. I totally agree. Everyone needs to be notified if there's an application in the lake. I do support public health and safety. I think it's critically important that we move down this path. We have to be very selective with each project. On ecological preservation, so I also feel that's terribly important. What gives me heartburn is Rotenone.
Oh, yes, yes.
All of us.
Yes.
But there's an overriding beneficial use here. I think this is terribly important to Lake Tahoe. It's terribly important to Lake Tahoe for the eradication of the invasive species. I had wished that the Rotenone subject was a separate topic. Like I say, I've always supported ecological preservation. I do agree with Dr. Ehrman, the report in here, the letter. I am 1,000% supportive of that, but I think there is an overriding concern here.
Peter?
I don't see that either of the alternatives to this amendment are viable. I think it's really important to recognize that this is not a single one-time action by the board that just sets the stage for a series of considerations of specific projects in which people who are involved in the locality where the project is going to take place have an opportunity to come before the board and lay out what specifically applies to that project. So it would be certainly wrong to say that the board has committed itself, in my mind at least, to any particular or specific course of action in any location at any point in the future. So all of the options that this creates are available, but all of the potential objections that people have to any and all of those options are not precluded by the action by the board today. What this means is that we'll see you all again perhaps in the future, or people in another location who have similar concerns, and that I think is appropriate. It's really hard, it's very difficult to appreciate the diversity and the difference throughout this region. And until I began to sit on the board, I'd never given that incredibly obvious observation any thought at all. But as soon as you sit down and say, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a policy for Lake Tahoe, and then we're going to have a policy for parts of the region where there is no lake. And there hasn't been a lake for an incredibly long period of time, that's a really limiting approach in and of itself. And it really, I think this is the only thing that makes sense. And with the change suggested by Mr. Sandell, I would be in support of adoption.
Dr. Mark?
It's clear that we need to make a change in the basin plan so that we can bring existing uses of chemicals and water under a board regulation, under board authority. We've just been looking in the other way, and that's not an acceptable situation. In Lake Tahoe, our existing means of controlling aquatic invasive species is demonstrably inadequate. With the weeds, what happens is that we actually, with trying to control these weeds, we're actually making the problem worse, because a little piece of these plants breaks off, doesn't need to have roots and stem and the whole piece of the plant. It can just be a piece of the plant. It will move around the lake. It will take root and propagate. So we're actually spreading the problem of the weeds. And then there's a whole cascading effect on the ecosystem of the lake, which is then you're creating habitat that then supports other non-native species, and then those non-native species then eat the native species. So, once these things take hold, there's a whole cascading effect that we've seen in Lake Tahoe. I really appreciate the water purveyor's concerns, and but sitting on this board, we balance competing needs. And actually, for the water purveyors, you should take some comfort in that, because we have to look at what is the impact on municipal water supply, what is the impact on recreation, what is the impact on habitat. We have to look at all those concerns and then balance those competing concerns in setting our policy. And it's not an easy task. But we have to have the ability to weigh those competing concerns as in specific circumstances. I think another thing to remember is the large volume of water in Lake Tahoe. We've all heard this before. If it were spread over the state of California, it would be 1 foot thick. That's a lot of water. And so there are some dispersion, dilution factors going on in Lake Tahoe that I hope to give the water purveyors comfort. So I'm in agreement with my other board members. If we remove the half-mile limit for the written responses from the water purveyors in Lake Tahoe, I would be in support of the resolution.
Okay. Staff understands the amendment or change that board has suggested as far as taking out the...
I think it would be appropriate. Let's be very specific about the words we're suggesting to be taken out.
And if it's a board subject, you may even want to take a break. But I'll tell you what I'm thinking right now. But I want to let you know one of my concerns. We would propose taking out the entire clause. So on the, this is the second paragraph.
Which page?
We're on page 85. We're on page 85. The second paragraph under subsection 1D. It says, for projects conducted in an ONRW, for example, Lake Tahoe, then we would delete, starting from the word that, we would delete that entire clause that may impact surface water intakes used for drinking water located within 1/2 mile of the point of application. We would just remove that. So what we would be saying is, for projects conducted in an ONRW, the following additional requirements apply. So you just say, you're doing it there, you've got to notify, you, then the part I and the little 2I would apply. Now, one of the questions staff raised is that it says proponents will provide written response from the water purveyors. That's a broad statement. And we could say Tahoe, I was suggesting we add Tahoe Basin water purveyors, but then the question is, does that mean South Tahoe Beauty? I mean, the folks who just rely on groundwater, we probably don't need a written response from. We know there's one instance where we would want, and it's a well in the Tahoe Keys that has the potential to pull Keys water. I mean, that's what they're pulling now. They're in the ground. I mean, it's a well, but it's pulling lake water into it. So I just, you know, I hate to complicate things. Like I said, if you want to take a break, we can think about that. But that, we could say Tahoe Basin water purveyors. That would be all Tahoe Basin water purveyors. We could say Tahoe Basin surface, Tahoe Basin water purveyors relying on surface water, for instance.
Well, I'm not sure that I see a reason to narrow that field, because it's at the option of the purveyors to respond. And so I would be much more comfortable giving any water purveyor the opportunity to be notified and then make their own decision as to whether they want to respond and in what manner. This doesn't compel anybody to respond. It doesn't compel anybody to make a written response that then has to be provided.
Well, it's sort of, I mean, what it says is it puts the onus on the project proponent. It says the proponent will provide written response from the water purveyors that indicate either modifications or consent.
I see what it says. I take that to mean that if the water provider sends the project proponent a written comment, the project proponent must pass that comment on to the board for its consideration. But I don't take that to mean that the project proponent has to go knock on the door of every water provider and demand that that provider give them a written response, even if they don't care one way or the other about the project. Perhaps I'm not reading that correctly.
And I agree with you, Peter. And is there a way that we can put in there that it puts a little bit, the proponent has to contact the water provider. But if the water provider does not yay or nay in a reasonable amount of time, the proponent shouldn't have to go out and beat on his door like
exactly.
Peter said.
I know. And it's clear that for the rest of the region, you know, we are just telling the project proponent, tell us that who you contacted. For Tahoe, we added the thing about provide the written responses because we really didn't want to just know that, oh, you made a phone call, you never heard back from them, maybe you called the wrong person. You know, we really did want sort of some evidence that they made contact, and that evidence was going to be something from the purveyor itself.
In the Tahoe Basin document, maybe this is a question for gentleman from the Water Association, how many water purveyors approximately are in the Tahoe Basin? 50. Yeah, 12 or 15?
No, it's more than that, unfortunately. I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, but there's a lot of small water districts. And Mary's got...
So does the number he gave us, 12, include that well in the Tahoe Keys?
Pardon me, is the 12? No, this, I'm going to count these out.
Could I make the point that the well in the Tahoe Keys is not that of a water purveyor? Nobody drinks that water. They use it for irrigation.
Tahoe Keys Water Supply, if I can interject, they have their own water purveyor, the Tahoe Keys Water System, which pulls from the three wells in the Tahoe Keys and provides water to the drinking water.
That well is
directed.
And we've known about that well. I mean, that was some of our concerns in the past, and you know, because we know they're pulling like water. It appears there are 21 separate water intakes in the lake, and about 18 separate water purveyors. And those are the water purveyors that rely on surface water. And so then there are other water purveyors not on this list that only have groundwater. Like South Tahoe Beauty is not on this list, for instance.
Right.
Would it be satisfactory to require the project proponent to send a written notice to all of those people on that list and then require them subsequently to provide to us any written response that is received pursuant to that notice?
Yes, I think that's reasonable. And actually, in looking at this list, which is really helpful, Mary gave me, because it's got the list of all these operators, it does appear, Jack, that when in looking at this list, it's so comprehensive. In other words, most of these water districts have sort of both, you know, surface water and water supply. Like South Tower PD is not listed on this list, but North Tower PD and Tower City PD are, because they have both groundwater and surface water. So it may be not a big deal to just say all Tahoe Basin water purveyors,
right?
Because I think...
I don't see that as a problem, if the number you're looking at. The only thing is that I would like to give the proponents just a little bit of protection that there is a time or something reasonable, because some of the smaller districts, some of these letters can get thrown off to the side.
Yeah.
Down in my area, we've got a lot of small districts that they're still...
Right, but that's why I think that they wanted originally to know that they had to provide a response to make sure that they followed up, so they didn't just send a letter,
right,
but that if they didn't get a response back from the people who were within a half mile, they then called them or went knocked on the door, whatever they did to make sure that there was
that
communication.
Yeah, documentation, we know that.
So that was the original idea in putting provide the written response. So,
and again, I think the context too, this, because you have the half mile limitation, you have a limited number of water purveyors that would fall under this obligation. Now, if you open it up to 21, it's a much broader list from that obligation. So,
I think there's two things. I think you have one that you want to limit. So you could say proponents will provide written responses to comments received from water purveyors. You know, to make it clear, they only have to respond. But I think that maybe we do want to somehow put something in for maybe a limited number, that there is more of an outreach to avoid what you were suggesting.
Maybe we could take a break, let people work out the language.
Okay, yes, let's just take a 10-minute break and you work out a little bit of language and take it to the
Okay.
I don't see why you have to provide require this project to do the work.
I just wanted to touch base on that. Do you want to meet right after the board? It looks like they're getting ready to wrap up. Is there something else afterwards?
I don't think so. I think that's it. I think we should try.
Do you want to meet afterwards then, or do you still want to meet at 1 o'clock? Do you have other plans?
No, I can meet afterwards.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see what happens here.
Okay. That would be good.
Sure.
Yeah, I need to back in the office with him.
Sounds good.
Vibrating their eyes. She was.
I'm trying to revise the language.
I missed you earlier. I'm in a meeting, so I had to leave the meeting up on you. Well, I was. I guess I couldn't find it. The phone was ringing, so I was just fumbling for anything to make it shut up. Right, I knew that. I talked to Kelly. Well, that sounds pretty crappy. Well, look, because the springs are cheap, because they were cheap to begin with. I understand. What kind of blocks? The idea that we have a cinder block, you know, I mean, it didn't look like it was designed in Appalachia. You know, how high does this need to be above the base? Oh, okay, so it's more like a bridge.
All the stores that you want out of your own community.
Yeah, I guess that, and so it's going to be laid out for the platform made up of little blocks, which has a slot in it where there's no block, where the drain can come out. Yeah. And I assume that these will be anchored in some way to the supporting slabs so that we have a pretty long to fall off. Well, I think they have to be, so we have the complete assembly, so it doesn't move around, you know, independently. So it all has to move together, and hopefully it all moves together very far. Okay. Great. I haven't heard anything about whether the company has gas. They are. Will we have gas if we turn it off? Oh, perfect. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Yep. Okay. And they've got a thermostat. Okay. Yeah, just won't regulate. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay. Yep. Okay. Heading to a appointment, so I should be home in a couple of hours.
There's a
filter up there, so you have to go 15 by 20. But are you thinking you could put, but let me just say, if you could put a larger filter at the furnace, I think it would be a better idea.
I can clean all this stuff, you know.
No, I don't mind going to the chrome thing. I think it would be more effective if we have more filter area. I always thought that the one that was up there, which came with the house, which was not necessarily too small, but it certainly has higher velocity than we really like. You know, a 20 by 20 or something would be better. And so if it's possible to just fill that into the plenum, that would be great.
Okay. Surface water or groundwater underneath, so that
Yes, and then we may remove the one that's on the stairs, so it's just a grill. Yes, exactly. No, I wouldn't change the hardware. But I think if we took the filter away, then we'd have better flow. And but we still we need filtering, of course, but a bigger filter would be better. Oh, no, sorry.
No, the last time I saw Judy was in June. Yeah, Judy and I and some other people did. I haven't seen her since then. Maybe, well, I mean, I haven't worried about how to see her since then. I was just going to